Gosh, now I'm going to mispronounce my last name. Hey, this is Chris Ratzla from Fallstar, and you're listening to my chapter of As the Story Grows.
Welcome to the next chapter of As the Story Grows. I'm Brian Patton. This week, Fallstar frontman Chris Ratzliff joins the podcast. Chris also fronts Northlander, also on Facedown Records, and Cobra Cobra on his record label, Rat Family. Fallstar tagged the podcast Instagram page when their new record, Sunbreather, dropped. And that got me to check out the new record, which I instantly dug and asked Chris to come on the podcast. Chris chats about the influence that MXPX had on him, choosing to go with Come and Live instead of being pitched to Solid State, and the struggles that came with that decision, and the ups and downs of creativity and how it's driving what project he works on. Make sure you give Sunbreather a spin. It's a super fun record that I probably would have missed had the band not tagged me. So thanks. Enjoy my chat with Chris Ratzliff from Fallstar. Because we're black, all black, American heart attack, little smoke going out my stack, voices rasping but no crack, white. I'm excited. I almost didn't download the new Fallstar record. And then I was like, well, let me check this out. And the first track came on and I was like, oh, okay, I'm going to. I gotta snag this.
That's awesome. That was a risky song to put first, so I'm glad you liked it.
It was, but I like the risk. I like the risk. It was like different and intriguing. I don't know how other people are responding to it, but
yeah,
I like different. I feel metalcore it's kind of the same thing, right? Like, and so like, I don't know. I feel like people bringing in new metal or rapcore or whatever pop elements to it. It's like it's fun and exciting and different.
Yeah.
It does something different, right?
Like Yeah, I feel like metalcore is like one of those things that's very easy to make bad. Like you can make really good metalcore songs, but really uninspiring.
Yeah.
So like anything you can bring in to like mix it up goes a long ways.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, I like that band, but there are 10 other bands that if you put them on shuffle, they all sound the same and I like them all.
Yeah.
But to be really good, it's like, oh, that's different. Like that catches my attention. So yeah. Congratulations on that.
Well, thank you.
So we'll start. Are you from Portland originally?
I was born in Long Beach, California. Okay. So my family's one of the millions of California families that came up and polluted Oregon. Yes. But yeah, we moved when I was like 4 or 5. So I did all my like kindergarten through.
All your years.
Yeah.
What was growing up like?
It was good. I have a twin brother, so that makes it a lot easier. Like when you get along with your twin, it's like incredible. So fortunately, like me and him are like best friends, so that was great. And then I had two younger brothers, and I didn't actually like them until we were adults, I think. We just fought a lot, which is a shame, but yeah, it was good growing up. Like my mom and dad lived at home and we were raised in like an evangelical church. So we did like choir and church plays and yeah.
That's cool. That's cool. What got you into music outside of choir?
Dude. Yeah. Well, I actually, I definitely hated choir. I never wanted to do that. And my dad is like a really good guitar player. Like I'll never be as good as him. So he would always play and stuff and like try and show us things. And he had all these instruments that he would let us play, but I didn't care about them. And I don't think I really connected with like any sort of music until I heard MXPX.
Okay.
And I was like maybe I was probably like 7th grade.
Okay.
Yeah. And that absolutely blew my mind. I heard MXPX and Bad Religion on the same day.
Nice.
Yeah. And MXPX like I started writing songs to, or lyrics to their songs in my own like way. Like I started like that week. I was like, holy crap, I could write songs like this. And yeah, so MXPX turned me on. And then I started playing bass when I was like 15. I bought my own bass and I bought a book and I learned how to play some scales. And then I just played along to MXPX.
That's nice. So Mike was your inspiration to pick up bass?
Yep. Yep, I eventually bought a Stingray. Nice. Started a three-piece punk band. Yeah.
That's awesome. How old were you when you started that punk band?
Probably 6 months after I got my bass.
Oh, yeah.
So, like 15.
Nice.
Yeah, nice. And I did that band till senior in high school.
Yeah, that's awesome. Did that band have a good name?
Oh, man. Frantic Harvest.
Frantic Harvest, all right.
In the way of frantically harvesting souls for Christ.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I the imagery is there. Oh, man, I love it. That's great.
I know, yeah. I need to put that album up on Spotify just for kicks sometime. Man.
Why did people do that? Why did we choose band names like that?
You don't think about it following you into your adult years or something.
It's always good podcast fodder, though, so it's great to hear.
I know, it's still my email address.
Oh, man. That's so awesome. That's great. What was your transition into to hardcore and becoming a frontman?
I started listening to Solid State stuff maybe shortly after I started playing punk music. So maybe junior year of high school, I got one of those Solid State samplers. It had Beloved and the Death Campaign, Figure Four, and I think maybe the Agony Scene or one other band. Those blew my mind.
Yeah.
And so got into that kind of music. And then I was still playing punk though. And then I lived in Kenya for a little bit. And then when I came back, my punk band was kind of over. And someone just asked me, like told my mom to tell me when I got home to join their band. They're a heavy band, so I just joined and played bass for them. And I kind of like it. Heavy music exploded by the time I got back. Like all the bands were playing that, and it was punk when I left. So it was really interesting. So I played with that band for a little while, and I was like, yeah, okay, I kind of get what's going on, and I want to start my own thing now.
So, that's cool. What took you to Kenya? Just missions after high school, or
yeah, I did YWAM. So nice. Yeah. But I didn't play guitar till I was 20. So I bought like an Epiphone Les Paul, and I just played along to Under Oath albums and August Burns Red, and that's how I learned to play guitar.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's cool. How did Falstar start?
Me and my twin brother Jeff, and then another guy who just played bass for us. We just started practicing our garage. We didn't have a drummer or anything, and eventually we just convinced people to play with us.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I think I went through, well, we've had like 17 different members in Falstar, so it just takes a little while. But we eventually found some people who wanted to like actually like practice consistently and play shows. And that took about a year and a half of doing that. Because like I didn't have any like reputation locally in the scene, so it was just gradually getting to know people and convincing people to play in my band, and them quitting, and then finding other their friends to join and stuff.
Yeah, how'd you guys get connected with Come and Live?
We got hooked up with this Wake tour. It was called the Wake tour. It was this clothing company called Vail Arms that brought us out for it in New Mexico. So. Like Levi the Poet was connected with them and stuff. And so that's how we got to know him. And our friend Jameson does like PR and stuff.
Yeah.
So he brought us on with the Wake tour. And that was with like Sleeping Giant and Glorious Unseen and like Flee the Scene from Face Down Records way back. Yeah. And we did, it was only like a 3 or 5 day tour. I don't remember how long it was. It was a very short run. But Chad Johnson was on that run with Sleeping Giant, and so he saw us play a set and he was like, you guys were awesome, you commanded the crowd. It was like it was the biggest show we'd played thus far, and we did really good, but we only played 3 songs because our van broke down and Flee the Scene had to bring us to the show, so we loaded on and we only got three songs, but we played really well, and he was like, well, we could I love what you guys are doing and your hearts and stuff, so you could come join this new thing that I'm starting called Come and Live, or I could pitch you to Solid State. And so we were like, oh, well, Come and Live sounds good.
My God, my God!
That's cool. What was that time like? I know there was a lot of bands and he was just putting that music out for free. What was it like as a band in the scene?
It was very exciting because it was something new. Mm-hmm. And like, we had pretty high hopes for it because the expectation from Come and Live was pretty high of what they'd be able to do for us and like how they'd be able to help us release music. But I wish we could go back and not do Come and Live because it was not good for bands, I don't think. I mean, they're not doing that anymore,
right?
I think for a reason. But yeah, we should have went with a traditional label, but we just didn't know. And like, all through growing up, I just learned like the best advice is not to listen to anyone else's advice. And like, everyone was always saying like, labels are a thing of the past. Like, even in 2007, they're like, labels are so over. And so we thought the new model would be something like Come and Live or something like that. But it was cool because it pushed our album out. Like, I think the first, like, the Your Eyes Don't Lie EP and Reconciler, Refiner, Igniter had like 17,000 downloads, which that was even before Spotify, I think. So that was like, that was a huge number to get our name out there. So that was positive. But yeah, it's definitely a very interesting thing for a band to do.
Yeah, it was like, I don't even remember. I like stumbled across it. It was like, okay, this is what Chad, who's Take Hold to Solid State to Come and Live, this is his next thing. And the breadth of bands was like from Falstar to with the Ember Days, who I really like, but it's like that dichotomy of like, you could get anything when you download a record from Come and Live. And it wasn't, I think it became less known for having heavy bands, even though you were on the label and Life in Your Way did a record there. And,
Holding On to Hope.
Yeah.
Stuff.
They were Holding On to Hope. They were so good.
They were awesome. Yeah. And also there was they had a keyboard player, See the Light. And the Blood, maybe, or maybe they there's a couple heavy ones.
That's cool. Do you think being on Come and Live though helped you kind of transition into touring, that made it easier to transition to Face Down?
I don't think so, because Come and Live didn't really like help us with tours or any contacts, or we didn't tour with any of the bands ever. I think we played like the Cornerstone stage the one year that Come and Live had a stage there. So we played that was fun. But no, we had to learn everything ourselves, and we've pretty much booked all of our own tours except for like maybe one or two. Towards the end, we had a friend starting to book when we were touring a lot more, and he did a really good job. But it was just us.
That's cool. Well, how'd you get connected to Face Down and that transition over to Face Down from Come and Live?
We were just looking for someone to put out our next record. So we recorded three songs for Backdraft, and we decided to do them really well. So we paid the most money we ever had for demos, and we were like, we're just going to do it really right and send them to labels and see if someone wants to pay for the rest of this record.
Yeah.
And we sent to like 60 record labels, and we heard back from a few. Like, we went down to play a Media Scare showcase. They had Turkey Fest, so they had like Ghost Inside and Bermuda and all their Sovereign Strength, all their big bands. And so we tried out for them. We thought we were going to sign with them for a while, and then we didn't hear back from them, and we didn't hear back from the rest of the labels. And then like maybe 4 months later, Jason hit us up and he's like, hey man, I love these songs, just do a record. And I was like, oh my god, I thought no one was gonna pick it up. But I think our tour dates spoke a lot for like what we were willing to do, because like in our press pack that we sent out, it's just like tons of tour dates for an independent band. It was a lot of touring. I'm so proud of you.
Were you guys already planning on working with Chris for that record? For Backdraft?
Yeah. Yeah, we did the demos with Chris. Yeah.
That's cool.
That's cool. That's awesome. I didn't know how big of a deal he was before we started doing it with him.
Yeah, he did like all those Rise bands and
Yeah, right as we were getting out, Issues was coming in to record their first EP.
Oh wow.
That was beginning of something crazy for them.
Yeah. 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 I'm just looking at his discography now. It's impressive.
Yeah. Yeah. He's super into the plug-in stuff now too.
Yeah. Did you guys, you weren't on Face Down long, and this is probably well water under the bridge, but like, did you guys have an issue with the label at first, or was there something that came between you guys?
No.
No?
No. They've always been like amazing and super supportive of us. We just didn't sell records. So gotcha. It didn't make sense for them to pay for another one.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Yeah, I was just saying they've always been just way too cool. Like, we feel like Jason's maybe like the last decent person in the music business as far as labels go.
Yeah, everybody has nothing but nice things to say about him.
Yeah.
When you decided to kickstart Future Golden Age, because you're doing it on your own, did you feel like you could take more chances and like, you know, the fans are backing this? Did you feel any sort of pressure to create something for the people who are supporting the record, or just like, we're on our own, if we don't sell, it's all on us, so we can write and record whatever we want and have more freedom? Because that record, like that and Sunbather, right?
That's Sunbreather.
Breather.
Yeah.
That's just like that record, man. I know. And the artwork's so similar.
Dude. Yeah. When we put out the artwork for that, someone's like, that looks like Def Haven, Sunbreather. I was like, or Sunbather. I was like, what? So then I Google it and I'm like, shit. I've seen that
exactly
record.
I've seen that record.
And I remember I looked at that when I was trying to design a cover for Future Golden Age. I really wanted to do a pink album cover. And I just must have forgotten about it. And like, when someone posted that, I was like, no. I mean, there it is. I mean, that's like the most straight up ripoff you can get, name and color scheme, but yeah, I don't mind. I mean, it's the record is Sunbreather now, but
yeah,
definitely they get all the credit for that artwork.
Yeah. So before I botch the album name, like Future Golden Age and Sunbreather have a lot of like similarities musically and more experimentation and kind of that outside the box view of music. Did you feel freedom because you were in it yourself?
Yeah. And not in a way that like Face Down pressured us to be a certain way, but we were like, oh, this is like a bigger label, like, and I got really stuck in like, oh, what's working right now? We gotta kind of incorporate the things that are working. So I was listening to like a ton of Memphis Mayfire or like Bring Me the Horizon, or like all that stuff, and I was just comparing all the songs I was writing with those songs, and I was thinking that it needs to fit in this box, or it needs to have a breakdown, or it needs to be a certain way. And with Future Golden Age, I was like, well, no one but our backers are going to listen to this. So we're going to put 16 songs on it. And it, normally, like, I would have cut out maybe 5 of those songs, or, you know, 4 of them, because they're not really album songs.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was just like, oh, I just do whatever we want and have fun with it.
That's cool. Was there something influencing you to move in that direction?
Yeah, I've always loved POD. Like, POD Satellite's like my favorite record ever. Okay. And we did a little bit of something like rapcore with that Alexandria 363 song on Backdraft. Mm-hmm. And I kind of wanted to push more into that feel. And in that time before I started writing for Future Golden Age, I finally like discovered Limp Bizkit and Korn and like just any sort of bounce music, like Rage Against the Machine. I just had never listened to those bands before because I wasn't allowed to growing up.
Yeah.
And then I just went back, and Slipknot too was a huge one. And I'm listening to them, and I was just feeling like the bounciness. And like, I stepped more into that bounciness with Sunbreather.
Yeah, for sure.
As well. But Future Golden Age was more of experimenting with that and being like, oh, okay, this is the feel I want. Because before then, everything was pretty fast. I felt uncomfortable with like kind of a slow bouncing rhythm.
Yeah.
I wanted more of the fast because I come from punk. So, yeah.
Yeah. You know, people hate on them, but I'll stand Limp Bizkit on this podcast. Like, Wes Borland can write like ridiculous riffs, and like they're just catchy songs all the time.
Yep.
Big riffs and catchy hooks. Like, it's great. And yeah. Yeah, when Sunbreather started, that's definitely what it made me think of. Like,
cool.
So I don't know how other people feel about that, but it's the connection in my brain, and it works. So it works for me. No, okay. It's my
podcast. I've learned a lot from that band. They're awesome.
Yeah. After self-releasing, I guess in the process of self-releasing, was that when you started Rat Family, or was that after?
Yeah. It's when I started Rat Family. It was just kind of like a good umbrella name to keep everything under.
Yeah.
And it just looks more credible to have like a little label insignia on the album. But I don't, as far as it being a label, it's pretty much just all the supporters. And like, I have a website, but I never update it, but it has some of the info on there and everything. But yeah. It's not really a label, because I've tried to do the label stuff and I'm horrible at it, but
what led to Falstar kind of calling it quits there, going on hiatus? I don't know if you officially broke up or anything there.
No. Just couldn't write songs.
I
think I've said this before, but I think I wrote like 63 songs, and only one of them made it to the record, the Get Me Out song. I just couldn't write, and so then I took a break from that, and I did Northlander, I did this active rock band Cobra Cobra, and then I did some other collaborations with some other bands, and then I have two other records that I've written that I don't know if I'll ever put out, but I just had to explore other areas of music because I was so burnt out with heavy.
I
didn't know what would come next, and the songs weren't coming, so it just took me a while. And then Northlander, once I decided I was going to do that, that took up a good 2-year chunk.
Yeah, outside of just not wanting to do heavy music, what was the inspiration for Northlander and making that hard pivot?
Yeah, I always felt in the past that I would write these like really cool like ambient parts or guitar riffs that just wouldn't fit in a Falstar song, and I want to keep Falstar pretty like protected from getting mushy. Like, I want it to just be like hit pretty hard every time, and I don't want like a lot of ballads or like a lot of just straight up singing songs in it. So I was like, well, I have all these musical inclinations towards ambient, so I'll just write a record like this and get it all out of my system. And it was funny because those songs were just on the edge of my brain. Like, it was so easy to write that Northlander record. Yeah, they all just came out so fast. Like, I had all these ideas building up, so it was good to kind of purge all those ideas so I could get back to heavy.
That's awesome. How did that relationship reignite with Face Down to release that Northlander record?
Well, we released it like independently.
Yeah.
And then Jason texted me. He's like, this Northlander album is so good. And I was like, oh man. And I was like joking. I was like, you should just sign it, or you should put it out under Face Down. And he's like, okay, well, we could work something out. And so we talked it out and he put it out.
That's
and a
awesome.
Whole lot more people heard it than if we were to just release it as Rat Family.
Gonna take to erase all the pain, too many lies.
And then, yeah, you mentioned Cobra Cobra, which on the Rat Family site, it says it's a legacy metal. How did that project start?
I thought of that term. I thought it was so, so smart.
It makes you think of something.
Yeah. something. It was just a friend of mine, Derek. There's these brothers in town, Derek and Chancellor Reader. So Chancellor does that band 09, who I did a song with a while ago, or maybe last year. And then his brother is Derek, and he wanted to start a band. And so he just paid me to sing vocals on the songs because I felt like I was too busy or something. But it actually turned out really good, and I ended up enjoying it a lot. But it's like, I would say old school metal, like really old school before they started screaming in metal. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then my vocals aren't like that, so it gives it a little bit of a modern twist, but it's very old school musically.
Yeah, yeah, musically, yeah, it's that Iron Maiden feel.
Yes.
Yeah, with your vocals, and it still has that growl at times, which is nice. It's a, yeah, it's a unique sound.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, that was fun. It stretched me a lot because the way he would write musically, it was really, really hard for me to think of vocal cadences, so it pushed me a lot, and I'm actually really thankful for what I learned by doing that.
So with Some Breather, because Face Down had already done the Northlander record, was it real easy to just have them step in and put out this new Falstar record?
Yeah. I sent over a proposal to Jason. I was like, so if we get this paid for, would you want to do like the marketing and stuff like that? And he was like, yeah, absolutely. And it so far, like, it's turned out to be a really good deal. Like, it worked out for both of us because there's less risk for them. And and they do a lot for us.
Yeah. Kind of releasing it now where touring isn't happening and you feel less pressure to perform and get out there with this, or was that never going to be on the table anyways?
I don't think so. Like, we can't tour like the 6 week, 8 week tours that we used to. So if we do tour, it's going to be like little festival runs. Like, we go to Germany a lot. So I think we're going again this year. And then we're going to do like little 5 day West Coast runs too.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. We talked about kind of the musical inspiration. What's your lyrical inspiration for this record?
I would say just like social justice is just something I think about a lot. So definitely that. And then Jesus. That's an easy one. Like, I just I grew up like with that ingrained in me so hard. Like, I feel like no matter what happens, that's just always how I'm gonna see the world at first glance. And like, Jesus is just super badass, so it's like really easy, like superimposing him on modern day stuff, like for King Laser or something like that. And then I as far as like how I'm trying to like use metaphors and stuff, Secret and Whisper have been more of an influence on me lately. Just the way he like talks about like animals and stuff, like nature. It's really funny. Like, it's almost like cute, but I like how it's so unassuming the way he does that, and I want to incorporate that sort of like childlikeness or like gentleness in. I mean, even though we're a heavy band, like I like that approach to lyric writing. So they, like, Charles's lyrics have influenced me a lot too.
That's cool. You said you have a couple other records. That's just solo material you have, or?
Yeah, I wish I could just show you. One of them is like video game type music. Like, okay. Have you played Rocket League?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like those songs. They're not like super long songs, but they're like super pretty drum and bass songs with vocals on them. And so I have five of those. And that's all recorded ready to be mixed, but I just don't know.
Yeah.
But those songs are so, so good. Like, I'm almost tempted to put it out on the next Northlander album, but it just, I don't, it's not a rock record. It's a drum and like, every song is 175 beats per minute. So it's meant to play for video games. But they're really good and super pretty. And then I have like a, I don't know, like a mushroom rock record, like old school. Just the guitars aren't super heavy and it's just like really free flowing and really catchy melodies. But that one's not fully recorded, but the songs are written. But I don't know if I'll ever put that out because I just want to put out Falstar and Northlander stuff.
Yeah, that's cool. Are you, you just put out this Falstar record, so is your attention towards a new Northlander record?
Yeah, kind of. I have kind six of. Songs. Yeah, I have six songs written for the new Northlander one, and I have two on my phone that I haven't gotten to put down on the computer yet, but I know those two are keepers. Like, they're very good. And they're all fleshed out on my phone voice memos, but I just haven't had time to put them on the computer.
Yeah.
But those count because I know for sure those, those will work. So the Northlander one's coming along pretty well, but I've just been in such a good mode for writing heavy music.
Yeah.
Like, I just finished the 11th Falstar song for the next record last night. And like, I've just been writing so well. And like, I don't know if you can see these guitars in the background, but I've just gotten into baritone guitars.
Oh, nice.
So like, I dropped the tuning down between F sharp to, I guess, D1.
Wow.
So double drop D.
Holy
shit. Super inspiring. Yeah.
Double drop D. Oh my.
Yeah. And like, tuning just makes a big difference on what you play.
Yeah, for sure.
I've just been writing like crazy and really cool, like interesting stuff. So I don't know if I can ever beat Sunbreather, but they're still really good songs. So
yeah,
I'll finish those first.
That's cool. Do you feel taking kind of things in-house and not having any sort of pressure, do you feel creatively free or kind of unbound from like a record cycle? Do you think you'd get to a point where you're just like, here's a single on Bandcamp or a single on Spotify, video, like one-offs, as opposed to having to flesh out albums?
No, I don't feel pressure to do albums, but I just love the finished product of an album.
Okay.
So I love like figuring out track listing. I love thinking about like how the album's gonna flow. I love thinking about the art as a concept and how it informs like what you see, like what you hear in the songs when you're looking at the picture. And yeah, it's just, it carries too much. It's just such a huge part of making music for me. I can't get away from it. Like, it kills my soul to think about releasing a really good song as a single. But I would do it with B-sides, but I just don't have the resources or the time.
Yeah.
So I would love to just put out a B-side once a month or like once every 3 weeks, but I just don't have the time for it.
Gotcha. Gotcha. That makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Cool,
I just have like so much material like all the time. I just can't do everything with it. I just had to come to grips with like, just got to focus on the stuff that people are listening to and that gives me the most joy. And that's what I have to focus on.
That's cool. That's cool. What's the response been like to the new record so far?
It's good.
Good.
Yeah, it's really good. Our last one, Future Golden Age, I thought was a really good record. And we got a lot of not so good feedback from it and a lot of good feedback. But this one, it's been almost all good, at least of what I'm seeing.
That's cool.
So, yeah. And the numbers for Spotify and stuff are like really encouraging. And yeah, it's been a good release, I think.
That's cool. That's cool. Is it weird to go from Come and Live, where it was just people could download your record, to free, to where everybody's on Spotify now streaming and that's what's important?
Yeah. Yeah. I will take Spotify any day because we didn't get a dime from Come and Live because it's supposed to be pay what you feel.
Yeah, yeah.
But their business plan was crappy, or they didn't like what would it be called? Like how they split up funds. So people would pay for our record and stuff, but we just never got any of it.
Gotcha.
Whereas with Spotify, like, we're guaranteed to get all that money.
Yeah.
And it actually does help us a lot. Like,
that's cool.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The playlist culture is, it's weird to me because I'm just like, just give me the vinyl and let me, or CD or whatever. Right. Like, I just want to hold it, but you know, I'm old. So.
Yeah. I feel you. I don't like making my own playlist. I did in high school, but now I just like the full album. This world is not for me. Finding my way.
Thanks for listening to As the Story Grows. Our theme song was written and composed by the legendary Bob Nana. If you like what you hear, subscribe on iTunes and give the show a rating and review. If you'd like to support the show financially, click on the Patreon link at asthestorygrows.com. If you enjoyed this episode, share it on social media with your friends. Much appreciated, and thanks for listening.
I never felt so young.